and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. A big thanks, as always, to Sinead for keeping us company this afternoon. I have a very busy show for you today. We've got Gaelic Games, football, rugby, Formula One, and athletics. So let's get into it, shall we? Starting with Gaelic Games, there was a four-game card in the Co-op Superstore's Premier Senior Hurling Championship today. Charleville took a five-point win from their game against Éireann's Own, while Sarsfields finished with a two-point win against Newtown Shandrum. Elsewhere, Blackrock ran out 317 to 21-point winners against Newcestown, and Middleton's game against Kanturk was postponed due to a medical emergency in the crowd. Elsewhere, there were a further three games taking place today in the Senior A Championship. Glen Rovers earned a 17-point win in their game against Inishkara. Ballyhay beat Killa on a score of 216 to 49. And finally, Fermoy emerged victorious from their clash with Cloyne. The final scoreline there was Fermoy 313 to Cloyne 110. To the Premier League now, where there are three games down for decision this afternoon. Bournemouth finished 1-1 against Newcastle United after a late winner was ruled out for handball. Alan Seabrook has the full-time report from the Vitality Stadium.
But it's finished Bournemouth 1 and Newcastle 1. On balance, a fair enough result. Newcastle started the game on the front foot. Alex Isak going close for them early on before Anton Semenyo pinged one off the crossbar for Bournemouth. And it was that same player who drove into the penalty area on 37 minutes and squared it for Marcus Tavernier to give the Sherries the lead. That was a lead, though, that was surrendered on 77 minutes as Anthony Gordon popped up at the far post for Newcastle to square things up. And that was a goal that came sandwiched between two world-class saves by Bournemouth goalkeeper Neto. In injury time, Bournemouth thought they might just have nicked all the points as Utara put the ball into the net, but that was a goal that was ruled out for VAR for handball. It's finished. Bournemouth 1, Newcastle 1.
Elsewhere, it finished 6-2 in favour of Chelsea in their clash with Wolves. Frank Watson has the full-time report from Molyneux.
An afternoon of wonderful chaos has just finished here at Molyneux. The final score, Wolves 2, Chelsea 6. It was 2-2 at the break after Jackson and Palmer had put Chelsea ahead twice. Cunha equalising first, and then just before the break, Strand Larsen equalising again for Wolves to leave everybody at half-time thinking it could go either way. But a hat-trick for Noni Madueke in the first 16 minutes of the second half, set up every time by Cole Palmer to run in from the right and drive the ball across so in the Wolves' goal, changed everything. Chelsea rampant in the second half. Sub Joe Felix added a sixth on 79 minutes, set up by Wolves' old boy Pedro Neto, and it finished as a miserable afternoon for the Molyneux men. Wolves 2, Chelsea 6.
With just over 75 minutes played between Liverpool and Brentford, the latest score at Anfield is 2-0 to Liverpool thanks to goals from Luis Diaz and Mo Salah. In athletics, Rashida Adeleke has finished fourth in the 400 metres at today's Diamond League meeting in Poland. Sarah Healy was fifth in the 1500 metres, while Nick Griggs finished 12th in the men's 3000 metres. And finally, in Formula 1, Max Verstappen was unable to secure a home win at the Dutch Grand Prix today. Lando Norris took the chequered flag first with a 20-second gap to Verstappen behind him. Ferrari's Charles Leclerc secured the final podium spot. And the busiest reporter in Cork, the busiest sports reporter in Cork, I should say, Ger McCarthy has been taking in some of the day's LGFA action. So we're going to start off with that. He was pitch side to see O'Donovan Rossa beat Niamh Abon this afternoon in the Cork LGFA Intermediate County Championship. Here's the full term report.
Ciarán McCarthy for Cork's Red FM's Big Red Bench, reporting to you from Rossa Park in Skibbereen at the scene of today's Cork LGFA Intermediate Football County Clash between 2023 All-Ireland Junior Champions O'Donovan Rossa and 2022 All-Ireland Junior Runners-Up Naiva Vaughan. It's O'Donovan Rossa who have emerged victorious by a single point, 1-9 to 0-11, in a cracking game. Naiva Vaughan enjoyed the benefit of the breeze of a very strong wind in the opening half and led 7-4 at the break. Second half, O'Donovan Rossa came back into the game thanks to Ava O'Donovan's free-taking accuracy and a crucial goal after 46 minutes by Aoife O'Driscoll. That proved a vital score in a game that was decided by a single point. O'Donovan Rossa winning 1-9 to 0-11, but Naiva Vaughan are still very much alive in this Intermediate Football Championship, and we probably will see both of these clubs in the semi-final stages. From Rossa Park, on behalf of Big Red Bench, I'm Ger McCarthy.
Let's hear first from the winning side, O'Donovan Rossa. We've got manager James O'Donovan, followed by player Laura O'Mahony.
Okay, James, a very, very hard-fought victory, but 3 out of 3 in the championship, but against a real quality opponent today. You must be delighted.
Yeah, very happy with that, George, to be honest with you. Like you say, it was hard-fought. I think both teams were very, very equal in that game, you know, so it kind of negated each other. So it was just literally came down to one kick of a ball, and I think our goal was the turning point, you know. In fact, we got the goal, and I think our defenders defended really, really well there at the end, and they never looked like getting in to get that goal, like, you know, so that's the difference.
The wind was a big factor today. You had in the first half, in the first half, he had in the second half, but Aoife O'Driscoll's goal, as you said, proved crucial. But these are the kind of games that will bring not just your seasoned players on, but your younger players as well.
Oh, definitely, like I was saying to our lads after, like, it's worth 10 training sessions, you know, a game like that. And like, you know, to be fair to Naiva Vaughan, they're a real quality side, they've proved over the last number of years, so it's great to get in games off them, of teams of their quality, because it just improves you.
You won the All-Ireland Championship last year, junior level, you're up intermediate, but you know better than anyone that in this intermediate grade how difficult it is not just to win it but to get out of it. You've had a great start, but there's a lot of work to do yet for O'Donovan Rossa.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, we're well aware that, you know, these are the group games. You know, we want to do well and all the rest of it, but there's no jeopardy in them when there's no knockout. So I'm just pleased, I suppose, to have played a proper high quality intermediate team in Naiva Vaughan and show that we can acquit ourselves, so we know we're at that level now.
Yeah, you've got 3 games to go, and then, as we've said to Laura Manny there, then it's a whole new ball game. If you reach the knockout stages, you're on course to that, but you still got to do that. But once you reach that, it's actually a whole new competition then.
It's a whole new competition. Yeah, you know, I suppose the big carrot, I suppose, with it is that if you finish in the top 2, you get your home advantage, which is a big thing. So look, we're off to a great start. You know, we've beaten possibly, I think, the best team in Naiva Vaughan. So look, that gives us great confidence, I suppose, going into the rest of the group games. That, you know, hopefully, you know, we can keep going and keep getting the wins and keep performing anyway. You know,
excellent stuff. Well done.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Okay, Laura Manny, a very, very good and important win for O'Donovan Rossa, winning by a point here against Naiva Vaughan. I would imagine, though, you'd expect to see Naiva Vaughan again before the championship is out.
Yeah, 100%. Look, again, hate to bring up 2 years ago, but it's always in the back of our minds, I suppose. And Junior A, they got to the All-Ireland final, so they also got to the county final last year and only lost by a point against Glanmire, so we know what we're up against. And it's obviously great to get the win and win in such tight margins, but look, this game doesn't win any trophy at the end of the day. You know, there's 3 more games to play, and we'll be looking forward to those now next, which is just another step along the way.
Yeah, I mean, this game keeps it 3 out of 3 for you, but you've got to get to the knockout stages, and then it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah, exactly. Look, we've played 3 now and won 3, so you have to be happy with that. We've a break next weekend, and then we'll just be looking forward to the game after that, and then taking it week by week.
Enjoying playing in central midfield as well, seeing plenty of the ball.
Yeah, look, it is nice to get back to club football, especially on the back of last year and things. Now fitness needs to come up a small bit, but these things happen.
Excellent stuff. Well done.
Thanks a million, Ger.
And we've also got reaction from Naiva Vaughan. Here are the post-match thoughts from manager Noel McDonagh and player Lydia McDonagh.
Okay, Noel, a 1-point defeat, but a real quality, high-quality game for Naiva Vaughan against a tough opponent, and I would imagine a team you're more than likely to see between here and the end of the championship.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that would be our goal, that we'd be meeting these guys again, you know. And, you know, they're down in their home pitch, which is always a difficult place to come to, you know. So conditions were, you know, we played with the wind in the first half, and, you know, we found it difficult to put up the scores, and they got a lot of people behind the ball and couldn't get shots off, you know. And the second half was a dogfight, you know. we're trying to get shots off, get the wind there with the Findy and attacking on the break. So that's what you expect down here. It's going to be a quality side, you know. They didn't win the All Ireland last year for nothing, you know. So they know they're on the up, and it's going to be a good battle going forward. We look forward to it.
Goal that Alice O'Driscoll, our goal, proved crucial. It's something that he didn't manage to get. If he had gotten a goal, do you reckon he could have swung the game your way?
Yeah, I suppose in tight games, like this, they always say goals win games, like, you know, and that was the case today. And, you know, only for a keeper but off a great save, they could have got a second, you know. So we were probably lucky enough, but then on the other side of that is we probably had missed three or four frees in the second half there with that wind that normally we'd be expected to put over the bar, you know. So again, when we meet again, there'll be nothing in this going forward. And, you know, this is going to be a tight group, you know. There's Valley Rovers, they're going to be there and thereabout. You know, there's Inch and all these teams, they're good quality sides down the intermediate, you know. So we're going to have to obviously take learnings from today and step up for the next game again. But as I say, we have three more games in this group, and you know, it looks at this stage that Skib, ourself and whoever the other two are going to make up the group will be there at the end.
You've got a very, very talented panel of players. You have had since reaching the All-Ireland final in 2022 junior level. You also have Rosie Corkery back in the squad today. Great to see her back out on the pitch.
Actually, Rosie's a quality player. Like, she's been in the Cork panel over the last 2 years, and, you know, she's just back with the last three or four days, so we just give her a run today just to get her fitness back up again. But Rosie will be back with us now full time for the next 5 or 6 weeks, and Rosie's great to put the head down, and she'll train hard enough for the next few weeks, get back, and, you know, when we bring her into the mix, you know. And it's great, it'll put other players under pressure, other players have to step up, and that's what drives the teams on. When you have a big panel of players, they drive each other on, and we have a very good second team as well now. So, you know, it looks well for the future, but, you know, we're still young. I mean, we still a lot of girls there just after leaving cert, and they were probably out the weekend as well, so they've the weekend put over now. So hopefully going forward, you know, we'd buckle down now. This is, you know, getting to the business end of the year, and that's where we like to be.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Lydia, disappointment for Neva Vaughan, a 1-point loss, but you're still very much in this championship and you've got 3 games to turn things around.
Definitely, yeah. We knew coming down here now to Skib, they had home advantage, and, you know, like, even the conditions today, the wind was very strong. So, like, the 3 games that we have coming up will really clean up on all our passing and scoring and all that. So, yeah, it's a good game to come up against. It's a good challenge just to better ourselves in the long run. So, yeah.
Yeah, as you said, very, very difficult conditions today, very windy and for kicking in, but I have a feeling you'll be seeing O'Donovan Rossa probably before you're in the end of the championship.
Most definitely, yeah. No, we knew coming down here it was going to be a hard game. Fair play to them, yeah, they really held out to the end of the game, and, like, home advantage again, as I said, like, it really put them over the line. But yeah, the conditions, like, the wind here was awful strong, like, but still, like, we're always going to come up against something like that, so we just need to better ourselves, and, you know, that's going to come some days, like, you know. So
yeah, this game will bring you on. I mean, James O'Donovan Ross manager saying, like, this is better than 10 training sessions, and I imagine that's the same for you playing such top quality opposition.
Most definitely, like, coming to training, like, you can only do so much, but coming up against a team like this, it's always going to make us better at the end of the day, like. And yeah, we knew coming down here again, as I said, like, the challenge was going to be there, and it was at the end of the day. So yeah,
excellent stuff. We'll see you again for the end of the
championship.
Thanks
so much, thank you.
All right, we are moving on now, because the senior Cork City FC women's side had a fantastic 2-1 win against Bohemians yesterday, which means that they will now await one of Athlone Town, Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers or Shelburne in semi-final stages of the FAI Cup. That draw is going to happen on Tuesday, with the last of the quarter-final games to be decided between Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne tomorrow evening. In the meantime, though, I got to speak to team boss Danny Murphy earlier today and got his reaction to last night's game. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Danny Murphy, Cork City FC Women's Senior Team Boss. Danny, congratulations on the win against Bowes last night, which has officially booked your team spot in the semi-final stages of the FAI Cup. How pleased are you with that result?
No, yeah, look, we're buzzing. I think even still today, it's still kind of on a high after the result. I mean, just the level of performance from the girls in terms of the effort and what they put into the game, like, they deserved everything they got out of it.
Completely. And it was a bit of a hectic end to the game with those goals all coming very late and so much extra time as well. How were the nerves during that extra time period? I'd imagine it was quite intense.
Yeah, it is. It's a weird feeling, really, because you, like, you know, that you can't really control the outcome of our players' play and then what they do. You can set them up in to do certain things, and sometimes it, like, moments of brilliance from players, like, win your games. And, like, yesterday, I think we had two really good moments of brilliance, and the won us the game, you know, with Ola's finish and then Eva's bit of skill to deliver the cross into the box. And that's what football's about. And they're the moments that you love as a coach as well, and the enjoyment it gives you out of the game.
What would you say were the biggest positives that you'll take from the overall performance yesterday? Because there were a couple of chances in normal time as well.
Yeah, I think for me, just the level of commitment the players show to the football club, and you know what they do on a day-to-day basis, and you know the effort they put in every day at training and the hours that they put into it, you know, it just shows in terms of performance how much they care and love playing for the football club, and that they play with pride, and they, you know, every time they put that jersey on, they give everything they've got to the game. And I think, like, for me, like, that's always been something that we've tried to achieve as a staff. And you know, having the players there that fully commit to that, it just makes everything so much more enjoyable, because as a group, they're a brilliant group and they're all there for each other, and they put their bodies on the line for the football club.
I was going to ask you about that, because it takes a lot of, you know, as you said, commitment, and I think maturity as well, to be fair, to push through in tough situations like that. But it sounds like there's a really good culture within the group, and that they all push each other on, and that there's a lot of support there.
Yeah, no, look, we have a really good support network for the players. You know, we have Dennis Lorden, who's a sports performance coach, and Dennis come in kind of the latter end of last season and, you know, started working with the girls. And look, it hasn't been easy over the three seasons that I've been involved with the club. We've had some difficult times. We've had to rebuild. We've had to, you know, bring a lot of young girls through, and we're still a young team. We've had some really disappointing results and some tough performances to take, but like, we knew that if we all stuck together and we all worked for each other and we do the right things, that it will turn a corner and performance will get better, and you know, results are improved and we'll climb further up the table. And I think that, like, all the help that the girls have got from the staff and the commitment that they've put into helping the girls develop has made a massive difference, and that's why we've got that group that all care for each other and all will put their bodies on the line for each other. And you know, and that's why we're achieving what we're achieving, because you're nothing without your players, and without the players showing the level of commitment they've got, we wouldn't be where we are. And it's a testament to them and what they do and how they approach things is why we're achieving what we do.
And on the flip side of the coin, you know, things obviously aren't going to get any easier from here. That's the tough part about it, I suppose. But what are the key areas that you'll be asking the girls to work on in kind of the lead up to the next stage of the competition?
Yeah, no, look, I think we have to put the cup to one side for this weekend, because we have another important league game on Saturday. But like, look, we're preparing the same way we're preparing all the games we go into. It's mainly a focus on us, and then some implementation of what the opposition might do. And look, we've just got to take each game as it comes. And I know it's a cliche and people don't want to hear it, but we can't get too far ahead of ourselves. And we see who we get drawn against on Tuesday, and whoever we get drawn against, we'll control what we can control, and that's our own performance, our own attitudes, and how we go into the game.
Yeah, and how do you feel about, you know, people often say that it's sort of detrimental to have such a young team, but as I said earlier, they're able to show that maturity, and there's leaders within the team, even though they might be young players. How valuable do you think that's going to be going forward in these tough matches, you know, when there's players that maybe haven't been in this kind of situation before?
Yeah, no, look, it's all a part of the learning game for the girls as well. When it's our, as a staff, we help them get through them difficult situations and learn, and look, and look, they've got to learn on the job, and that's just the way things are. I think, look where we are in the country and being down in Cork, we're never going to have the luxury of being able to sign players and bring them in from with experience from everywhere. We've got to promote for our academy, and it's something we've taken big steps towards, because if you look at the majority of our team, they've all come through our academy, barring three or four that we've had to bring in from outside. But they all have some relationship with Cork City and with the county. So the girls we've brought in, goalkeeper Una, her family are from Cork, and Ola Omani's dad, parents from Cork. Colleen's married someone from Cork. Doro's probably the only one who's a bit of an outsider who's from Germany. But like, there's a love for the football club, and like that love for the football club and wanting to do the right things for it and wanting to achieve the best possible outcome to it. Look, the experience they get from games and playing at the better teams and playing in, you know, semi-finals, hopefully in a final, and hopefully going on to win things is only going to come from playing in them situations, and that's the only way you're going to get the experience of doing that. And look, we do have a very young side still, and we're still learning on the go, but we're learning at a really good rate because players want to learn and they want to get better.
Lee, well look, congratulations again on last night's result and best of luck going forward. Thanks so much for joining us again on the Big Red Bench.
No problem, and I appreciate the phone call and the interest and support that you're giving the club and the girl, especially on the girls' side, because we need every little bit of support we can get to keep pushing forward.
Absolutely, well said. Thanks, Danny.
No problem.
It has been a long time since we've had an F1 chat because of the summer break, but racing is officially back, and the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort was indeed won by Lando Norris today. He was joined on the podium by Max Verstappen in P2 and Charles Leclerc in his Ferrari in P3. And you have to say it was a composed and controlled win by Norris, but it didn't get to the best start because Lando Norris may have qualified on pole for that race today, but Max Verstappen was very much hoping to spoil the party, not least because it marked his 200th Grand Prix and it was of course a home race, and he did indeed get a better start than Norris to take the lead on the first lap, but things never really got any better for the Red Bull driver from there. And he had been able to break the DRS gap of 1 second to Norris behind him in the early laps, but it wasn't long before Norris started to pick up the pace. It was around lap 12 and managed to get within DRS range again. Meanwhile, as this was happening, Verstappen was complaining about a lack of response from the front of his car in particular, which, as we know, Max likes the front of his car to be very pointy, meaning that he likes the car to be sharp and responsive, and that's essentially the opposite of what he appeared to be getting from the car today. As a result, Norris got the job done on lap 18, took the lead back from Max really without too much of a fight. And when it came to the first round of pit stops, it was looking like Max Verstappen was going to be a little bit stuck because he didn't have a clear gap to come back out into. But Lewis Hamilton did him a solid, slightly unknowingly, because he pitted on lap 24 for a set of hard tyres and came back out in P16, which gave Max that small window to pit and get out ahead of Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. But at the end of the day, it was Lando Norris's race, and by lap 25 he had built out a gap of over 4 seconds, and he pitted himself on the following lap after Verstappen, and despite it being a very slightly slow stop, he came back out in P4 ahead of the Red Bull with a gap of 8.5 seconds. And by lap 46, it was interesting to hear Norris's race engineer already talking to him about the strategy that they would undertake in the event of a safety car, which didn't happen, but it was interesting just to see how much they were thinking ahead at that point. It's lap 46 in a 72 lap race, so just over half the halfway point. And I'm still not 100% convinced by the approach that McLaren take in that regard, with running pretty much every decision past each of their drivers, but it did work today for Lando. And with 10 laps to go, there was a space of almost 17 seconds from Norris to Verstappen behind him. And of course, Norris ended up winning the race with 20 seconds to spare. So a comprehensive win, and of course, another successful effort at cutting into Max Verstappen's lead in the Drivers' Championship as well. Elsewhere, it was damage control for Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. It was interesting to see the approach that they took. Obviously, Hamilton had not qualified well and had then been hit with a 3-place grid penalty for impeding Sergio Perez in qualifying yesterday. So he did start from P14. Russell had a better day overall, but you have to say they really had to dig deep, I think, to get any result at all today. Hamilton pitted for a set of soft tyres with about a third of the race to go and immediately started lighting up the timing screens, and he was in P8 with a gap of about 24 seconds to make up to Sergio Perez in front of him in P7 when he came back out with those new soft tyres on. And Perez then overtook Russell because Russell also pitted for what was a used set of soft tyres, and essentially Russell then became Hamilton's new target, and he did get to within 1.5 seconds of Russell, but it seemed that whether it was a decision made by the team or because Russell did stop slightly later than Hamilton, perhaps neutralised that pace a bit, even though Russell's tyres were used rather than new when they went on. But as I say, considering the fact that Hamilton went out of qualifying in Q2 yesterday and Russell was struggling for grip at various times across the weekend, Mercedes could very conceivably have done a lot worse than a double points P7 and P8 finish this afternoon, but certainly not operating and reaching the same heights as their pre-summer break form, where obviously they won two of the three races in the lead up to that summer break. Other honourable mentions, both Aston Martin cars seemed to be showing good pace on Saturday, but only Fernando Alonso could convert that to points in the race today, finishing in the final point scoring position. Just ahead of him, P9, was Pierre Gasly, who really seemed to get the utmost out of his Alpine this weekend. So kudos to him. He qualified well and drove well in the race. And then Charles Leclerc got a very opportunistic podium today, although he had looked the more comfortable of the two Ferraris all weekend. They were way off the pace overall, and I think they'll have to be very pleased with that result, finishing ahead of Oscar Piastri. As I say, opportunistic, not necessarily done on raw pace, but at the end of the day, it's the result that matters. Let's take a quick look at the driver market, because there have been a couple of key moves made since the last time I chatted F1 on the show, including confirmation that Carlos Sainz has committed his future to Williams on a multi-year deal after he departs Ferrari at the end of this season. That's huge news, obviously, for Williams, and the word around the paddock is that their aim is to replicate the long-term trajectory that McLaren have taken over the past couple of years, which of course has worked out very well indeed for McLaren. And look, it has to be said, it's certainly a much more exciting prospect to have Carlos Sainz next to Alex Albon in that Williams lineup going forward, rather than Logan Sargeant, who unfortunately made another big error this weekend with that big crash on Saturday in FP3. And apparently, again, word around the paddock is that that incident may be the straw that breaks the camel's back, because Mick Schumacher is allegedly being considered to replace Sargeant before the end of the season, so not a good look there for the American driver. On a more positive note, Alpine confirmed that their second seat next to Pierre Gasly going forward will be filled by the very patient Jack Doohan. The Aussie driver has been waiting his turn in Alpine, and he's finally going to be rewarded with a full-time place in the team, replacing, of course, Esteban Ocon. And as long as there's no major surprises for Oscar Piastri or Daniel Ricciardo, between now and the end of the year, we'll be heading into the 2025 season with no less than three Australian drivers on the grid, which is 15% of all the drivers on the grid. So well done to the Aussies for that. And finally, I have to mention the "are they, aren't they" that's been going on between Toto Wolff and Max Verstappen. Mercedes, of course, have not yet announced who will be filling the seat that is being vacated by Sir Lewis Hamilton with his upcoming move to Ferrari. However, Toto Wolff did confirm in the course of the week that he met with Max's manager and also his father Jos during the summer break. And to hear Toto tell it, essentially both parties decided that it wasn't the most beneficial decision for either of them to have Max move to Mercedes right now, which you would think would leave the door open for Kimi Antonelli, who's the other main name that's been in the mix for that seat. But really, we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. But according to Toto Wolff, there will be announcements made soon about that one. Formula 1 is headed to Monza next for the Italian Grand Prix on Sunday, September 1st. Will we see Lando Norris cut further into Max Verstappen's lead in the Drivers' Championship? Only time will tell. Second half of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you until 7 p.m. Let's get you a final score and a full time report from that last Premier League game of the day between Liverpool and Brentford. It has finished 2-0 to the hosts at Anfield. And it has to be said, Trent Alexander-Arnold did not look happy to be substituted, but we'll take that as a good sign that he's hungry for the season. And of course, there's a new coach there as well to be dealing with. But a good first home game result, and Shane Pennington has the full-time report.
Liverpool 2, Brentford 0. The starts go for a new manager. It couldn't have gone much better for Arne Slot. two wins from his first two matches, four goals scored and none conceded. They were always in control of this one after Luis Diaz fired them into a 13th minute lead, and Diaz went from scorer to creator when he set up Mo Salah for the host second. Alexander Arnold and Gakpo also hit the woodwork, whilst Mbeumo and Collins missed the visitors' best opportunities. It's finished here, Liverpool 2, Brentford 0.
Okay, we are moving on now to rugby, because the Munster women's rugby team made it 3 wins from 3 in their 2024 Interpro campaign against Connacht up in Galway yesterday. But before that, I had the chance to do a deep dive with head coach Fiona Hayes on their win last weekend against Leinster. So let's have a listen to that now. I am delighted to be joined again on the Big Red Bench by Fiona Hayes to chat about last weekend's Interpro win for Munster against Leinster at Virgin Media Park. Fiona, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks a million.
When we spoke after the win against Ulster, you talked about the team wanting to play wide. And as we know in rugby, you have to earn that right. And I really have to say, I think in the attack last weekend against Leinster, the girls seemed to show a lot of patience and maturity in the way they built their scoring opportunities. How pleased were you to see them putting phases together like that? Because they're still a young team coming together.
Yeah, look, it was brilliant. And look, we had the review yesterday as well, and we probably even spoke to them about other chances where we could have gone wide as well. Our focus last week in particular was pulling the trigger. So that's to go wide. That's to really trust our catch pass. And if there's space there, try and get that ball wide. So look, we were very happy. Niamh Briggs, the attack coach, was the one pushing it. And we were very happy with how they approached the game. And I suppose you've got it in one there, which are knowing when to do it as well. So their decision making around that area was brilliant at times in that game against Leinster.
And I have to mention as well, I suppose at closer quarters, the carries from particularly Dorothy Wall and Jane Clossy. Jane was painfully close to scoring her own try as well. How vital is it to have those kind of players as a foundation? Because Munster really did dominate possession and territory for large parts of the game.
Yeah, look, and I wouldn't have expected that against that Leinster team coming up. You know, when we looked even at the stats afterwards, we had made a lot of meters in those carries, and we were very proud of that, getting past the gain line. Dorothy Wall and Jane in particular were exceptional. I mean, Doro, we reviewed, as I said last night, and we showed a clip on the 75th minute, I think it was, and Dorothy came up with an absolute huge hit, which eventually was a turnover by Lucia Lynn, and we eventually scored up in the corner. And I think, you know, it's big moments like that, big players stand up, and she was just exceptional. And Jane around the pitch in her carries and everything that they were doing. So we had, I suppose, during the week, the pack in particular, you know, we pushed work rate and were we going to that dark place? And they definitely came up trumps on Saturday. They worked their socks off. And I suppose as the forwards coach as well, I was immensely proud of that.
Absolutely. And a lot of the girls were actually smiling, running in at halftime. It's great to see them enjoying their rugby, especially in what was always going to be, I suppose, a tough test against Leinster. What were the kind of talking points at halftime? Because obviously the period just before halftime was maybe a bit more difficult.
Yeah, look, I think we were 2 points down, but there, one of the main reasons they would have been smiling was because Leinster were actually parked on their line, and the forwards in particular, we'd spent a good bit of time on maul defence. And for us to be able to just, from that 5 metre channel, we hit that maul, and for about maybe 10, 15 seconds, we completely dominated and eventually pushed them out over the try line. So I think that was a big moment for the team. And look, when you looked at the start, we had so much possession, you know, how we can control the game. But 2 tries, I suppose, we'll be disappointed with, because Leinster will admit themselves, for just those 2 tries in particular, the first one, they wouldn't have had to work very hard. So when you go in at halftime, there was a lot of positive chat about how we are, you know, I suppose, dominating possessions, how we need to hold on to the ball, but definitely that we're still in the fight. And, you know, the hunger was there from the girls. So how they came and went about their business in the second half was really good. And I have to say, the bench in particular, there was a huge emphasis on them actually making an impact. And this week in particular, they came on, and there was some key moments from very good players on that bench.
Yeah, just to that point as well, Niamh Briggs was speaking to TG Cahir just after Leinster took that lead, and she mentioned the team being young and kind of having to, I suppose, learn how to find a way through these challenging games. And clearly they did a really good job of that. They were really supportive of each other as well, it seemed, you know, even when there were mistakes. I can imagine from a coaching perspective, it's great to see them forming that kind of positive, supportive culture.
Yeah, and that's what we do. We want to instill that in them. We have leadership groups. Everything needs to be player-led, especially I feel like on game day, you know, you can give messages, and we have the headset, and there's very small messages we'll give, but it's those, I suppose, leaders, those senior players, they need to be able to come up with how to fix things, how to control things, and those game management aspects, and especially with the younger players there, because they really do look up to the likes of, you know, Chloe, Doherty, Enya, and those players were just playing out of their skin. And when you see someone like that as a younger player, you want to match that. You want to be working just as hard as them. And I felt like that filtered down from the top, from those senior players.
For sure. And you mentioned Doherty's hit towards the end of the game a few minutes ago. There was another fantastic moment right near the end where literally the smallest woman on the pitch, Myrna Wall, held up Leinster when they were so close to scoring. And again, the whole team, I think, just showed massive heart after that, as you mentioned, to get back into Leinster's 22 with less than kind of 5 minutes remaining, really, and they had absorbed an awful lot of pressure in the 15 minutes before that. You must have been really pleased to see them actually, again, know how to close out the game and just keep the energy levels up.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's, as you said, those key moments. And Myrna has been superb in everything that she does. And for her to get under, the ability to get underneath that ball, and even Lucia Lynn coming off the bench, ripping the ball out of Linda Jugang, you know, who's an Irish international prop. Yeah. But it just shows in between that rip, and I think the try, I think it was maybe about 3.5 minutes, but their ability to soak up that pressure, to be able to recycle the ball, you know, with so many changes. I think we had everybody on, so 8 new players were on the pitch at that stage, and then just to pull the trigger and eventually go wide to score that try was just amazing to watch. And I remember shouting and roaring and jumping off my seat nearly up in the coaching box.
Love it. The last time we chatted as well, we spoke about the importance of really strong set pieces in your line out, your scrum. You mentioned them all, defense earlier. And I think what's really great to see is that Munster seem to be very good, this team, at turning defense into attack throughout the game. As a coach, how nice is that to have it as kind of an extra tool, I suppose, in the toolbox, where you know that it's not just about attacking plays, but that the girls actually, even when they're in a defensive position, they're able to flip that switch and go on the attack then?
Yeah, look, and we'd I suppose do a lot of that unstructured counter attack. And you know, in attack, when you have the ball, you'd have your shape, you'd have what you want to do, you have where you want to hit in the pitch. But when that ball is turned over, as you said, when it turns from defense into attack, it's the individual player and what they see. Yes, we'll eventually find our structure, but that's what's so exciting about these young kids coming through. Even Katrina Finn doing a couple of chips over the top. Like, you have to just sit back and admire the confidence and love that confidence that's instilled in them, because it's brilliant to watch, and it's their ability to see space and see what to do with the ball. And look, there's other times where it mightn't pay off, but I suppose as a coach, what you have to do is keep backing them, show them, you know, this is what we can do when we get things right. And I felt like their decision making, especially on Saturday, was much better in those areas, knowing when to hold on to the ball. And even with Leinster, we'd seen a lot of, I suppose, in the game previous, we'd seen they like to keep the ball alive. They did a lot of offloads, so our defence had focused in stopping those offloads, trying to tag the ball in double hits. And I think we got some good change out of that. And when we turned it over, they ramped up the levels to go straight into that attack. So it was brilliant, as I said, to see.
And you've got the final of the three Interpros this weekend away to Connacht. Obviously nice to have two out of the three games being at home. But what are you kind of expecting from Connacht this weekend?
Yeah, well, Connacht, they're a tough side, and, you know, even tougher to play away from home. Yeah. And look, they're on the back of a loss and a draw, and they'll probably be disappointed with the nature in which Ulster came back last week in the second half. So Connacht are just an exceptionally physical team. They've a really good set piece, but they've now got some electric, you know, wingers. I've worked with a couple of the wingers, Leisha and Clara Barrett, both play with Bowes last season. So I know the talent that's there, and they've Maeve Dealey in the backfield as well. So they've got a really great balance. They've been working hard in the last couple of years to get those players in there. And I think they'll be fairly confident at home. So we know what they're going to bring physically. And we've just got to be able to, especially after last week, we've got to be able to match that physicality, but also be able to move them around the pitch so we can find some sort of holes to go after them in.
For sure. And you had mentioned the last time we chatted as well about maybe working on discipline, especially when Munster are in the ascendancy. Do you think that will continue to be one of the focus areas heading into this weekend as well?
Yeah, look, we went, I suppose, our first game we'd given away 16 penalties. That was very disappointing. You know, and that's an area we looked at, and we focused on that a lot on throughout the week before the Leinster game. I had asked for single figures. They got to 10 this week. But I will say there was one he gave for knees on the ground when it was a rip and there was no knees on the ground. So I let him off on that one. But no, look, you're always trying to concentrate on discipline, because I suppose it's a lot of it is interpretation of the referee as well. And it's the understanding that if you give away a penalty, I suppose it's the discipline to get back and not, you know, be annoyed or not, you know, I suppose give away another one or get involved in stuff you shouldn't be involved in. So I think that's all part of rugby, and that's why I love the game, because you have to also figure out what the referee is looking for off your mid-game. And I thought they were really good in that game on Saturday, and they'll probably have to look at it again when we go up to Connacht, because there's going to be a different ref there, and they definitely, all referees will focus on different areas. So these young players, I suppose, coming in might argue, oh, I didn't do this or I didn't do that, but it's at the end of the day, it's what the referee tells you. So they're disciplined around getting back, working hard, trying to, after you lose the ball, and getting it back. But I suppose in that scoring area, our red zone, we've got to be exceptionally disciplined, and I thought we were very good in that area on Saturday.
And the girls did indeed have a tough battle against Connacht yesterday, but ultimately came out as victors by 29 points to 24. And thanks to those three wins, Munster will now play in the 2024 Interpro final game, which is going to be a rematch against Leinster, but this time on neutral ground up in Belfast next Saturday. So we are wishing the girls the very best of luck in that game. We're going to finish up the show this evening with a chat that I had earlier this week with Cork Olympian Nicola Tuttle. Nicola spoke to us on the show a couple of times in the run-up to the Paris Games, but this was the first time that we had chatted since she had come home, and she was able to tell me all about her experience as a first-time Olympian. I am delighted to be joined again on the Big Red Bench by now Olympian Nicola Tuttle. Nicola, have you gotten used to people calling you that yet?
Definitely not. I think that's one of the first times I've heard someone saying that. Took me a little by surprise, to be honest.
I love it. Hopefully it doesn't wear off. It's a great one to have. I suppose we'll start there, maybe with it being your first time competing at Olympics. Did you find that you kind of had to have a bit of tunnel vision and try not to get swept up in all of the things going around you and just focus on the job, or were you able to sort of soak it in a bit?
I think a bit of both. Like, you know, during your training sessions and stuff, you have to focus, and obviously during the competition you have to, like, keep your head in the game, essentially. Do you know, you have to keep focused on what you're doing, but like all around, like surrounding the competition and everything, and like after, especially, like you just, like there's so many different things to do and all of these little bits to go around to in the village, and you just have to soak it all in. Like,
give us an idea of what the village is like, because I sort of just imagine it as all of these apartment buildings, but obviously there had to be kind of stuff to support you and keep you entertained as well, I presume.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the village had quite literally everything you wanted. Like, they had like a hairdresser, the food hall was open 24/7. They had like a game room, a chill room. You get coffees like the whole time, anywhere you wanted. And you had like, just in general, like you go for a walk around the village, or like they had all these like little vending machines that you got like a little card that you could like get everything out of them for free and stuff like that. So there's plenty of like things to be going around and just like trying all these new things. And they had a post office too, where you got like your face on a stamp and then you got to send some postcards like to wherever you wanted and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different bits you got to try.
Oh, I love that. That's very kind of retro, but I love that they did that. It's a great memento to have. I know as well, before you got to the village, you were in a holding camp, which was kind of, I think, about an hour outside of Paris. Can you give us an idea of what your day looks like when you're in the camp? Because you're still kind of in build up at that stage. Obviously, the track and field doesn't kind of happen until the second week mostly.
Yeah, so it kind of depended. Like towards the end, you were just kind of lowering down into kind of the getting ready for competitions, who weren't training as much. So like usually you get up, have your breakfast and maybe go down and train, have your lunch. And then after that, you'd either have maybe a second session in the evening, or like you could go for coffee or something just into the town there. And then like you go back, have your dinner. We might do, I know one of the nights we did kind of like, we had like a game night. It was kind of like, oh, they had like quiz and stuff like that for us. They put stuff up on the board and you'd like, in teams and stuff like that, you to guess like who they were and stuff like that. So they did that one of the nights. And then other than that, we'd be like, once the Olympics had started, you'd be watching all the other sports. And anytime there was an Irish person on, we'd try to have it up on the big screen and you'd be watching that as well, just kind of supporting from afar, I guess.
Yeah, brilliant. At this Olympics in particular, they really made an effort to, I think, highlight the field parts of the track and field event, because an awful lot of the time, even at the big competitions, the field events do sort of feel like they don't get as much attention. Did you notice that as well? Or how did it feel for you being there?
I suppose, yeah. Like there was this year, we had such a brilliant representation from Ireland. Like we had Eric in the shot, I was doing the hammer, and Kate was doing the heptathlon. And I think for people at home to be able to watch like the field events as well as the track, just to kind of have that variety, because like track and field has so much to offer with like not just running. Like you can do field, you can do throws, jumps. You know, like there's so many different events. And I think this year, like hopefully anyway, people like being at home were able to watch the field eventers. And you know, you never know, like I suppose for me, I started as a runner but ended up as a thrower, so having like try different events, you never know which one is for you. So hopefully for like young kids and stuff looking on, they might be inspired to take up some field events.
Absolutely, yeah, completely agree. And for yourself in the qualification round, you threw really close to your PB. You're only 10 centimetres off the 70 metre mark as well with your best throw. How pleased were you when you reflected on it to be able to produce that on essentially the biggest stage that you've been on so far?
Yeah, exactly. Like it was like, you know, the biggest competition I've competed in. And I suppose having my first throw, like obviously wasn't what I was looking for in the first throw. So I just had to like make sure and rein myself in. I went over and talked to my coach and we were just like, look, you've done it. Just stay relaxed. Try not to let it get you. But then we just kind of just took it all in and then went, okay, look, go back, focus. You know what you're doing. And don't worry about it. And then I was able to go back in and just kind of block it all out and start fresh again, I guess. And then I was able to get a decent throw out there. And then the throw straight after that was, I suppose, the throw. And I was so happy. And I wasn't even that far off of the final. So yeah, for me then, like I couldn't really complain.
Thinking back on it now, what do you think have been the biggest learnings maybe that you'll take forward from being in that qualifying round, you know, with the caliber of all these global athletes that you're directly competing against, they're your peers?
Yeah, I suppose like for me this year, I've definitely gotten such good exposure being out at international competitions like that. And I got to meet all of the senior athletes and I think you're always learning something from them too. Like, you know, there's always something you can pick up that like, be it something they're doing in their warm up or something they do in the call room to keep themselves calm. Like just, you know, there's always little things you can pick up on that, you know, in the future you might find helpful, I guess.
Yeah, definitely good to be a sponge, I think, in that kind of environment.
Yeah, 100%.
The Team Ireland homecoming scenes were incredible. I saw some pictures and some videos as well, and I'm sure you got a big welcome from your own community at home too. Has it been a bit of an adjustment kind of getting used to all that attention and so many people reaching out?
Yeah, 100%. Like there were so many, like we flew back and in Dublin, like the whole way from the airport like into the city, like there was people standing on the sides of the streets cheering if we were passing a car. They were like waving out the window. Like it was absolutely amazing. And then I think especially for me when I came back to Kilbritton, like the local community, like I was blown away by the amount of people that was there. It was just amazing, like to see so many people out supporting me. and like the amount of like Irish flags and posters and everything that like I could see on my drive home, I just thought it was amazing. And it meant so much because like even when I was on training camp, like my family would be sending on a photo if they spotted a poster on the side of the road or something like that. And I thought it was so lovely.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. It's great that you got to enjoy it as well when you got back. You'll obviously be heading back to college kind of soon enough, but hopefully have you given yourself a bit of a break in the meantime?
Yeah, I actually started on my break yesterday. So,
oh, amazing.
I'm taking a little bit of a break now and then I'll be back to college then again. So back into the whole routine of things again, I guess.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think to be fair, I could imagine that being in such a fantastic environment and being part of such a positive Olympic campaign for Team Ireland in general would definitely keep the fire lit to keep you going, because I know it's a tough off season and a tough winter sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Like this year was really, really difficult for me. Like I was full time in college as well as full time training, so like I quite literally had time for nothing else. But like being up in UCD, like they were so, so supportive, and like you have the option of splitting your year and like there's all of these things available to you, but like I just wanted to give it my best shot and keep going at it and see could I manage it, because I wanted just to keep going and get through college and everything. And they moved, in fairness, they moved some of my exams during the summer forward so that I could get away to do competitions, which like get me points to qualify for Europeans, qualify for Olympics. So like I have such a good support system around me, like with my coaches, my parents, you know, everyone. Like, so for me, I was lucky. Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely smashing it, obviously, you know, really hard year, but look where it got you. It's fantastic. We're delighted to have you on the show again, Nicola, and thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic stuff there from Nicola Tuttle. Loads more to come from her in the future. Really exciting things ahead. Before I finish up, I want to mention the Paralympics, which are starting this coming Wednesday. And if you're like most of the world, certainly I think most of the Irish population, I'm sure that there's been an Olympics shaped hole in your life over the past few weeks since it finished. So you don't need any extra motivation to tune in and support the Paralympics with just as much energy as we did for the Olympic Games. I'm personally super excited for the action to get started, and I've got some great facts for you about Ireland's involvement in the Paralympics, which you may or may not know that a team representing Ireland has competed at every Summer Paralympic game since their inception in 1960, and those first games took place in Rome. There were only 23 countries involved in that first games, and we were one of those 23. And since then, Ireland has won no less than 29 medals, and our most successful events have been in both athletics and swimming. So there is loads to look forward to as the games get underway on Wednesday. This year we're sending 35 athletes over to Paris, and we've got Cork representation in there, which of course we love to see. And thankfully, just like the Olympic Games, you'll be able to follow all the action from Paris live on RT2 and the RT player. So it simply could not be easier. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. But that is everything I have time for this evening, folks. Thank you as always for tuning in. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you. I hope you have a lovely rest of your Sunday, and don't go anywhere because Mag Blackburn is up next with Green on Red. The Big Red Bench with Ford Gosh Energy. Proud sponsor.